Blog Talk Radio.
Comics, Chronicles of the Revolutionary Black Nerd.
Tonight's guest is going to be Mr. John Jennings. I don't know if you all know about John Jennings, but he's a very accomplished individual. He is an associated professor of art and visual studies at the University of Buffalo State University of New York. He is also co-author of the graphic novel The Hole and Consumer Culture, Volume 1, in the art collection of Black Comics, which features different artists, which includes him and Damian Duffy. Jennings is also the co-editor of the Blacker the Ink Construction, Black Identity in Comics and Sequential Art, and co-founder and organizer of the Schomburg Center's Black Comic Book Festival in Harlem. Wow, this guy has so much going on. I'm just so glad he was able to come on the show tonight. He'll be our first guest for 2016. And I'm accompanied here with my co-host, Miss Cynthia McDonald. How are you doing, Cynthia?
Hey, hey. I'm good. How are you, Andre?
Wonderful.
Happy New Year.
So how was your New Year? How did you bring it in? Pretty good?
Oh, sure. I brought it in at home.
You know, it's kind of strange, you know, that, you know, you've been in Chicago and me being out here in Detroit, and when we say Happy New Year, you guys are like a whole hour behind. That's pretty strange to me and weird. You know,
yeah,
we all should be screaming Happy New Year at the same time.
Yeah, that's very true. That's why I was just kind of like posting Happy New Year Eastern Standard Time. I'm not there yet, but I'll see you in an hour.
Right. Yeah, I noticed that. Okay,
yeah.
I know last time we were on the show, we were talking about Star Wars. Did you ever get the chance to see it?
I saw it yesterday, actually.
Oh, yesterday?
Yes, I did. I saw it yesterday.
What did you think of it? I'm not going to go into any details of what happened because, you know, we may have people that, you know, don't like to hear about, you know, shows before they even went to go see them. They don't want to be spoiled by what had happened.
Right. No spoilers, exactly.
Okay.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I felt that it was actually very integral to what Star Wars is all about.
I really did
appreciate J.J. Abrams' take on how he went forward with directing it. I thought that he, you know, did a very, very good job. And the actors were phenomenal. I don't have any complaints about it. I mean, I felt that it took me on a journey from beginning to end. I was engaged the entire time, and I laughed, I cried,
right.
And I wanted more. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciated it myself. I thought
yeah.
It was pretty good. You know,
mm-hmm.
I thought J.J. Abrams did a good job, an excellent job as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish I could have, you know, I was waiting on the 8th installment. Actually, after seeing, you know, this one, I was ready for the next one already.
Yeah.
I was so excited about it.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was just like, okay, can the next movie start like right now? That's
right.
Kind of how I felt.
Right.
Like, I would have sat in the theater for a whole another 2 hours or however long it is. Even though it didn't feel that way, but it was. But yeah, it was very, very good. A very good movie. So I know that it was a couple of my friends that said that they were going to actually see it Friday. So no spoilers. I told them, mum's the word. But I did tell them you will enjoy it.
Well, I'm glad that you told them that. You know, everyone needs
mm-hmm.
to get out and see it. Well, you know,
mm-hmm.
we have a special guest tonight, Mr. John
yep.
Jennings. I'm going to get ready to plug him in because he's on the line now. And
awesome.
We're going to ask him a few interesting questions, you know, to see his take on everything as well. Okay?
Exactly. All right.
All right. Hold on. John Jennings, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, that's real good. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank y'all for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Glad you could make it.
Oh, yeah.
You're actually the first guest for 2016.
Yeah, it's quite an honor, man. I really appreciate it.
Right. Well, I figure I would get you on first, you know, because you have a lot that's getting ready to take place very soon. And
right,
I thought
right.
It would be good to get you on here, you know, to talk about that, especially the Black Comics Art Festival or Book Festival and the Art Festival in San Francisco. You know, I would like, you know, for us to hear more about that because, as a matter of fact, this year will be my first year at the Schomburg Center's Black Comic Book Festival in New York.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
And I can't wait to get out there. You know, I'm in the process of getting my books together right now. So, you know,
you have a blast, man.
Yeah, and I'm very excited about it. You know, just seeing the pictures that you guys posted from last year and the year before got me excited. You know,
right.
But needless to say, brother, we have our guest on here, which is you, and we have our other co-host, which is Cynthia Powell. Not Cynthia Powell, sorry, that's somebody else. Cynthia makes
<Sorry.
laughs>
I'm saying, my name's been changed
like
already.
Don't tell me. Right, don't tell me. But my other co-host, Miss Kelly McAlpine, she couldn't make it tonight.
Uh-oh.
Of course, which is good. You know, she just started a night job. So we're going to roll with the flow of what we have right here tonight, and we're going to make it fun.
Well, she's with us in spirit, then. That's cool.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm sure she had plenty that she wanted to say, but she didn't send it my way, but it's all good. So, John, let me ask you a question. How long have you been in the making for the Black Comic Book Festival? How long, you know, had you been doing this? You know,
the
idea and everything.
Well, it started, this is the fourth annual. And so basically, it ended up kind of as a fluke. It was kind of interesting. It's at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, which if people don't realize, it's part of the New York Public Library system. And it essentially is the repository for like the Harlem Renaissance, like a lot of artifacts from the Harlem Renaissance, a lot of papers, like, you know, it's work by County Cullen there, Aaron Douglas's paintings hang in the library. It's, you know, some of Langston Hughes' ashes are buried in the foundation of this building. It's a historic building, right?
Oh.
And so what was happening is, it's wonderful. It's like you're walking into history, right? And it's awesome because it's kind of it's affiliated with the New York Public Library system, but it also is an independent entity. And it's named after Arturo Schomburg, who was a pioneer and activist and intellectual that was promoting a lot of the ideas around the Harlem Renaissance and started collecting a lot of these artifacts himself too. So, and it's named after him. So anyway, so what's happening was 4 years ago, Stacey Robinson and I were doing the Black Kirby show that had been traveling around. And so that was a piece that was happening. And then Jonathan Gales, he did this movie, you're probably familiar with it, called White Scripts, Black Superman. That's an hour-long documentary. What'd you say? Yeah, and it's about Black masculinity and superheroes. And
right.
So he was going to be doing a screening there, and so he started thinking, like, oh, well, maybe we should show the Black Kirby work, right? And so the other thing was Jerry Craft, as you know, had been doing a Black Comic Book Day at Human Bookstore for a few years, right? And it was very successful. But then Human closed, and so he was looking for another venue. A friend of mine who was a visiting scholar there named Martha Diaz, and so she connected Jerry to the proper people there, and before you know it, myself, Jerry Craft, Jonathan Gales, and Deirdre Holman, who was the director of the gallery spaces there and also the Junior Scholars Program, we put together this idea to do a festival, and so we had academic panels and, you know, showings of film and, you know, things of that nature, workshops, and also vendors, right? And so the first one was really successful, and I think that people were very surprised at how successful it was. And it just started growing. And so before you know it, it's become like one of their most anticipated events over the last few years, and it's free and open to the public. And, people come, and they have a great time. It's really amazing. It's all day. You know, so it's always King weekend. So, yeah, it's the Saturday before MLK Day. So, So that's how that started.
It sounds like it was well thought out. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say that it was a fluke because, you know, being in New York and everything, you know, that's where everything is happening.
Well, definitely. I guess I was talking about just the origin of it, because it was like, what happened was we had a collection of people who had similar ideas, and we're like, well, hey, you know, we want to do this with comics. Let's pool our resources and then put our heads together, and that's what happened. So that's why I was saying the fluke. But yeah, definitely like the location is key, and it's a really great spot. It's in the middle of Harlem. And it's right across from Harlem Hospital, and it's right on a subway stop. So it's like it's easy to get to, and people come to the Schomburg for all types of events anyway. So, you know, it's a nice space for an event like this. And what I love about it is that it's primarily families and children and people from all walks of life. So it's a very family oriented event, and mostly like teachers and parents are coming there to find books for their kids and stuff. It's pretty awesome. So yeah, you're gonna have a blast. Seriously,
yeah, I can't wait. I'm just so glad to see, you know, how we're expanding. You know, with the Black Age of Comics, you know, Black Comic Book Festival. You know, this is really major. You know, now we don't necessarily have to, you know, go to like the mainstream comic conventions to be seen.
We can actually
have our own events, you know, and we're seen by just who we want to be seen by.
Right, and I think that's really important. And honestly, like you and Tertel and other pioneers who've been doing this for years, you know, all were inspirations to do that, you know. So it was like, well, we already become part of a network, you know. And the idea is to, like you said, try to expand and create these other venues. And so I was just kind of taking a cue from what you guys were already doing and say, okay, well, we already have a network of cons. Let's just start to build more, and so that, you know, whenever we have content that we want to get out to our people, that we can actually just do that. So that's what I've been trying to do ever since this has been successful, and start to try to expand. Because in the last 4 years, I've co-founded with other people three cons, you know, in different places in the country. So.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking, I was like, man, you know, this is, I've always wondered why, you know, there wasn't a con, you know, in New York, you know, because I consider New York being the mecca of so many different things as far as culture is concerned. And I've always wanted that. That's why I'm so glad to hear and know that I'm actually going to be a part of this, you know, next week. You know, I can't wait. You know, and I'm just glad to be a part of it. And from this point on, you know, I'll be a part of it every year. I'm hoping, you know, that I'll be able to make it out to San Francisco, but it seems like that's the same weekend.
Yeah, it's the same weekend, unfortunately. That's one of the only things. It's like, you know, it's kind of cool that we do it, you know, back-to-back. Basically, what happens is I have to, you know, what I've done the last couple of years is jump on a plane, like, in the middle of the Schomburg event and fly out to San Francisco for the next one. So it's been really crazy. But
you don't get burnt out.
You know, they're both connected to, what do you say now?
I say you don't get burnt out from flying like that.
Yes, I do.
but I bet you pick up a lot of frequent flyer miles.
yeah, I have actually paid for trips because of that too. It's crazy, but it's necessary to get the, you know, and it's a lot of people, so it's like, you know, it's a small price to pay, you know, when you can pull off the event. So yeah.
It was always you know, good seeing you at the different cons, you know, whenever, you know, I run into. That's always a wonderful thing. Always good to see all the different artists, different creators and writers. And
hello?
I'm still here. Andre, are you still here?
Sorry. Hello? Okay, I'm here.
Okay.
He popped out.
Andre, you still on? Andre, are you still on? I think that we lost Andre.
Lost Andre. Oh, man. Should we wait for the caller again?
Let me send him a message like, hey, log back in.
How long have you guys been doing this?
We actually started last month. We had two shows already, and so of course this is, you know, our next one that's coming in. So So it's really good to have you on.
Well, I appreciate it. No, that's cool.
I was like, we lost you. Here, one second. Okay, so I just sent him a message. Well, and I guess until Andre gets back on, we'll just go ahead and continue speaking with you. I know I had a few questions for you.
Okay.
I got a chance to you know, read a little bit about you, you know, get your bio, and and you know, just and I really wanted to get a chance to know more about you, as far as a creator and an artist, and, you know, basically what your journey was that, you know, led you to where you are right now. So I'm curious to know what really, you know, started your interest in, you know, in comic art, and even wanting to possibly, you know, do something on your own in that particular vein.
Well, you know, I was really inspired by my mom, you know, so she was an English major in college, and so she had like a lot of her, you know, her books that she had for her major laying around. So I started reading at a really early age.
Yeah.
Oh,
I got disconnected there.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
okay,
there you
was,
are.
What's wrong with
that? That was
up another fall. That's never happened.
Exactly. Like, how did I get started in comics, or at least being interested in the industry? And I was,
right.
I was about to regale you, you know, regale with the with the story. But yeah, so you know, I grew up in the South. I'm from Mississippi originally, and you know, I was born in 1970, so I was like post civil rights era, you know, kid growing up in a very rural, actually very poor environment, you know. And so it was like comics and other types of media were ways to escape, you know. So I watched like television, whatever TV I get on. I went to library a lot, but my mom's collection started me, so I started reading like mysteries that she would have, and like Edgar Allan Poe, and like, you know, Stephen King, and, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
At an early age. Yeah, I was reading, like, yeah, my mom was a huge horror fan, too, so I'm a big horror nut, so, for like,
oh, wow.
You see some of my stuff, you know, it's really kind of, some of it's kind of scary, yeah.
I was going to ask you about that, you know, what, because, like, I noticed that, like, you know, some of the, you know, some of the creations that you made were, like, in the horror genre. I'm like, well, what really interested you in, like, horror in the first place?
Well, yeah,
you know,
was my mother. Yeah.
Oh, blame it on mom.
Yeah, no, it was.
Right,
man.
Right.
It was. Yeah, she loved the stories. So she bought me my first comic books. You know what I'm saying? And so I just kind of fell in love with everything that was illustrated. And so, you know, we would watch horror stories together. My mom was really into action movies. I mean, really a cool experience where she would be. Really into, like, you know, kung fu movies and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of awesome to have, you know, someone who was raising you to have those interests. And so I was hooked, and so I started drawing at a pretty early age. And you know, it was kind of a hobby. I was good at it. I was really good at it. And then what happened was I ended up majoring in art at Jackson State University, and this was, let's see, from 89 to 93, and then I ended up working at the local newspaper there in Mississippi for a little bit, and after that, I only did that for a little bit, and then I actually ended up going to University of Illinois to get my first master's in art education, And then, yeah, and then I did my terminal degree, which is the MFA in graphic design. And so I started teaching. So I went back to Mississippi, and I started. I helped start the graphic design program at my alma mater, Jackson State University. And I was there for like 4 years, and then I ended up going back to my other alma mater, University of Illinois, and I worked in their graphic design program, and I got tenured there. And and I was there for 8 years. And while I was there, my interest in comics had rekindled. And what had happened was, I was thinking like, man, well, comics are cool, but I didn't really see myself being able to do it. I didn't draw the way that comic folk drew, and I still don't. I was like, my interests were very eclectic, and I don't make images that would be like you would consider mainstream. My stuff was very indie. But I didn't really know about the independent comics, or at least I didn't understand that I was reading a lot of independent comics and being influenced by them at the time. Hindsight is 2020, right? So when I was working on my tenure case at U of I realized that I could actually, make my own comics and that kind of stuff. And so that's when I end up meeting people like Andre and Gray Williamson, Machindo, people like that online at Black Comics, the now defunct but really awesome Black Comic Book Fest. Black Comic Black Superhero Museum. Sorry. it was created by Omar Bilal, and it was basically a hub for people to come together and talk about these issues, and there was a chat board called Hero Talk, and so it was places that you could put your images up, and the first time I met Andre was at ECBAC, actually, that was years ago,
I've been around, right, that's been about 12 years.
Yeah, exactly, so...
Wow.
So the thing was, me and my friend Damian Duffy, who is one of my best friends, but he also is one of my collaborators that I work closely with about these issues around representation. The thing that started me out was, did you guys remember that show out of Los Angeles? It was called The Masters of American Comics, and it was a big art show. It was a really mainstream show. It was in 2005. And it was, I want to say it was like 15 artists in it. And it was great people. Wow. Jack Kirby was in it. Will Eisner was in it. But there were no obvious people of color. Actually, there was one person of color.
Right.
And it was George Harriman, who did Crazy Cat. But there was no women in it, And so we were like, where's the diversity, And so that's actually what started me thinking about who was doing comics and what that meant to be represented in the medium, And so that's kind of like where it started. And I think the next thing, and Andre was in this show and ended up in the Black having his character in the Black Comics piece, was we did a show at Jackson State University called Other Heroes, and that went off into the Black Comics book, which was a collection of people from various backgrounds who had took images that were Black people. And so from there, my research just started going off into other areas like representation and social justice, looking at, equality for women and people who are LGBTQI, I started to realize like we weren't just doing like these stories. We're actually creating a new world, that we were actually taking these images and using them to empower ourselves and politicizing ourselves in a particular way. And so I think what's happened now is that when I'm trying to help people create these spaces, that it's become part of my artistic practice too, And so that's a little long-winded, but that's how I got to doing the type of stuff I do now. And so these days I edit books about Black images in comics. As a scholar, I teach. I create classes around this stuff. I'm an artist myself and creator, and fine artist and curator. So I dabble in a lot of things dealing with representation. And as Andre was saying earlier, it's like it's important for us to have our own spaces where we can actually empower our kids and think about ourselves as subjects. Because one of the things,
right.
if you go to like if you go to any of our cons, we are the default, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are the subject, we are the default, and that's not necessarily the case every time that you go to a con. In fact, more than often than not, we're not, right? So
right.
Yeah, so the idea is that when you go to these spaces, that our particular points of view is the subject, you know? And I think that's very important, and it's something that we don't get a chance as African-Americans to do that much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that is important because, you know, like John spoke on, even though we all are the same complexion for the most part at these events, all of us have different stories to tell.
Right,
you know, and all, and it gives everyone something different, you know, to look at, and something that they may be interested in as far as what they want to start off and get into drawing their own characters and designing their own works,
mm-hmm.
whether it's horror, superhero, sci-fi, whatever. We're giving them an option to look at, and that's one of the things I appreciate about the different shows that we put on as far as the Black Age. Type events,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're
mm-hmm.
really showcasing and we're really giving it back to the people.
Right.
Right.
No, I totally agree with that. So yeah, so that's how I ended up in that space. I mean, you know, I'm really these days I found myself being really more attracted to, you know, the horror side of stuff because you can use the supernatural and horror in a particular way to deal with like social justice issues, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at one of my favorite shows back in the day was The Twilight Zone, right? And
go ahead. Yeah.
And so you know when you look at how what Rod Serling was doing is he was using science fiction and fantasy and horror to talk about the human condition, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he basically was making morality tales. So essentially, what he was doing was he was taking like you know short vignettes. You know, short narratives, right? And using a style that was kind of like EC Comics, or EC Comics or the horror comics, like Tales from the Crypt
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that.
Right.
Right.
And all of those stories are morality stories. You know, they're all about morals. They're all about what's right and what's wrong. And they use horror because, you know, it's a very visceral, powerful way to tell a story, you know. And all of them are like, you know, about what you should and should not do or what is right and wrong. And so that fascinates me as far as, like, how horror in particular can do that better than some
mm-hmm.
some other genres can. And that's why I'm
right.
not just kind of like, so there's nothing to my madness. I do like these crazy horror things because it's a good way to shock people into talking about particular issues, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask this, since we're
mm-hmm.
all Twilight Zone kids,
yeah.
What's your favorite Twilight Zone show?
Oh man, my favorite Twilight Zone episode is The Howling Man.
The Howling Man.
I love that
yeah.
man. That is my favorite. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think my second favorite is The Mask. Okay, let me back.
That's
it. Let me
my
back
favorite.
It.
Right? I was going to say that's my favorite right there.
Yeah, the mask. Is my second.
Oh yeah, the mask is my favorite because you know everybody, you know their emotions just end up being on their face.
I know. That's
you know.
My second favorite because it takes place down south. I mean, it's really good, but The Howling Man though, man, is such a great story. So it's about this dude, this white cat, you know. Wandering around Europe, you know, that wouldn't have been us probably. But anyway,
right.
he's backpacking through Europe. He's kind of like in like the Eastern Bloc of Europe or something like that. And he
mm-hmm.
he just has on his little coat. He has his backpack and he's backpacking and he's cold and it's raining. It's in the middle of a rainstorm and he's sick. And so he's getting sick and stuff. And so he comes across this monastery, right? And so, and actually, it's funny. I forgot. I'm totally jacking this up. It's a flashback too. At the beginning of it, you know, he's telling this story to a maid in a hotel room, and he's like, "Whatever you do, do not open this door." So anyway, so he goes to this monastery, and they put him up and stuff, and he hears this man screaming downstairs. Right? He's like, "What is going on?" You know? He's like, "What? Who is that?"
Mm-hmm.
And dude was like, "Look, we have captured the devil, right?
Yeah,
we've captured the
mm-hmm.
devil. The devil is downstairs. Do not go downstairs.
Oh.
Do not let him out. Do not do anything, you know. And so what ends up happening is the brother thinks, he thinks that the monks are crazy. He's like, oh, these people are crazy. They did not capture the devil. Are you nuts, you know? And so the devil shapeshifts. He goes down there. The dude is like, he looks like a regular human being. He begs him, and he lets the guy out. As soon as he comes out, he puts a pex on him, makes him pass out, and then you can see him turn into the devil. And so after that, what happens. And so basically what he does is he lets evil out, you know, and so it takes him all of his life, but he captures him again. But it's called The Howling Man, and I was like, oh, man, such a great – it just gave me chills thinking about it, you know what I'm saying?
that was one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, I love that story, man. But, The Mask is another one of my favorites, so I think that's my second favorite.
You know, I find myself every New Year's watching Twilight Zone at least 7 hours in the day.
On like a sci-fi channel marathon or something?
You know how on New Year's they always show, you know, Twilight Zone for a whole 24 hours?
Yeah.
Oftentimes
they do that.
Yeah.
It, it, it,
so you
like
to
Cynthia, yeah, my bad. I know you were getting ready to say what yours was.
The Eye of the Beholder.
Is that the one where they're like an alternate universe and everybody is like...
Well, you know, it's about like the woman who... She's like beautiful, and but everybody in the world is like really ugly. And
right.
when they actually take off her bandages and they show how beautiful she is, she's like actually horrified. So
mm-hmm.
it really challenges like the and then remember Jay had to send her away to another place where other people actually look like her. Like all the beautiful people
yep.
had to go away, you know, because yep. they weren't accepted in their particular society because of the way that they looked. And I don't know. Well, I guess that one of the reasons why that really stuck out to me is because I believe it really challenged the way that we, you know, about our perception on, you know, the stigmas that we put on, you know, people. You know, and it's even something that we deal with today, especially
yes.
like, you know, women have to be, you know, look like this and, you know, they have to wear size 2 and, you know, men have to be muscular and, you know, everybody has like
mm-hmm.
stigma on, you know, how people look instead of like, you know, really judging, you know, the actual person themselves instead of, you know, what's on the inside of their personality rather than, you know, what's projected because all that is
mm-hmm.
just so shallow. And,
right,
I really do believe, you know, I really do agree with you what you said, like, you know, oftentimes Rod Storley really, you know, did these morality tales where he really, you know, made you think about how you think.
That's right. And he was really awesome about that show is he wrote so much of it. You know, he wrote
mm-hmm.
like almost the entire, you know, the entire run of it. He was just a workhorse, you know. Now,
mm-hmm.
did you guys ever see the one from the 80s? The new Twilight Zone?
No.
The kid when he sent everyone when they were scared to laugh around him.
That's an old one too. But you're talking about the movie, right? I mean, because they remade
Toys
of the Caliban. They have different names for that one, but they remade that so many times. That's another good one. But no, there was a TV show that was a new Twilight Zone. It was from the 80s. CBS did it, and it was in the 80s. And it was very good. And people kind of forget that one, you know what I'm saying? But it was really good.
I didn't see that one.
You remember Amazing Stories?
Right.
I do.
I remember Amazing Stories.
Yeah, so it was the same year that Amazing Stories used to come on. So this used to come on Fridays, and Amazing Stories used to come on Sundays. I was in heaven. For just to be a geek and to have those two shows, I never missed
mm-hmm.
any
right.
of those. And, you know, and so, yeah, the new Twilight Zone was great, though. And, like, a lot of people it definitely wasn't as good as the original, but it was a really solid show. And it was a full hour at first. It would be on for an hour. And eventually they cut it down to 30 minutes. But it had people like Wes Craven working on it. Bruce Willis was on an episode, and Morgan Freeman. I mean, it was really cool. If you get a chance, if you haven't seen it, I would recommend it. I think you dig it.
Yeah,
now, the latest,
it up.
The, the latest incarnation with Forrest Whitaker, that was horrible. I was so sorry, Forrest. So she was bad.
Well,
that's unfortunate.
Well, I know,
it was only one episode I liked.
You know, I'm one of these people. Once I get into an original story or episode, it's like,
yeah,
I can't get into a remake or what I would think was a remake, and I could never get into the new Twilight Zone. I do remember it back in the 80s. Now that you mention it. And for some reason,
mm-hmm,
I just couldn't get into it because I was still stuck on, you know, the one from the 60s or whatever, you know, the late 50s and the 60s, and, you know,
right,
just like with, you know, certain other shows like Star Trek, for instance. I was stuck on
Captain
Kirk.
Oh, man. Yeah, I love Captain Kirk. I got I'm a huge Captain Kirk fan, but Jean-Luc Picard is dope, too.
Yes, he
right,
is.
Right, yeah,
talk about
his
professor.
He is. But I just, for some reason, it just took a lot out of me to watch, you know, the Generation, Star Trek Generation. My favorite was
The Generation
was
so
the Board.
Good.
Yeah, it was.
I know, right? I mean,
it took me a minute,
almost,
you know.
Yeah, man, that's okay. I mean, I totally understand, like, you know, people, you know, because there's a sudden sense of nostalgia, and that's actually part of geek culture, is nostalgia, right? It's
mm-hmm.
something I'm really,
yeah,
something I'm interested in, is like how a lot of socialized ideas are, like, you know, because of nostalgia. You know, it's like, oh, that's the way we've always
mm-hmm.
done it. You know, I was like, oh, okay. But I don't know, it's you know, I was curious about it. Like, when I remember being a kid, you know, when they first started talking about the new Star Trek, I was like, whoa, this is going to be awesome. But, yeah, I was hooked. I was ready for it, man. My body was ready. You know?
Okay.
The first episode that just broke out with Q, you know, that was brilliant. And
oh,
Q
man.
Was like, you know, like the...
Right.
the if you knew that you was going to look at a good episode, you knew that they said, well, bring on Q, and everybody would watch. And they were right.
Right.
He was awesome.
Yeah, he was. You know, I met him, by the way. I met John DeLancey at a con.
Really?
Yeah, it was last year. I was at Lysticon. I was at Lysticon. He's a really nice guy, actually. Very, very mm-hmm. sweet guy. So it was cool meeting. I said, man, I'm such a huge fan of yours. But you know what's really crazy? And I actually really super geeked out because my grandmother used to make me watch her stories with her, right? And so, you know,
mm-hmm.
before that, he used to play a character named Eugene Bradford on the, what was the name of that show? The Young and the Restless, Days of Our Lives. So, you
oh,
know,
okay.
and so the character, I don't know if you know the character now, but he was an inventor. You know, he would invent all these different things, and, you know, he fell in love with this woman, and she was really kind of quirky and stuff like that. But basically, I thought this was hilarious. The way, you know how characters leave shows and stuff like that? So the character
right.
leaves the show. He creates a time machine on the soap opera, and he teleports away. They go into time, you know. So I was like, I thought that was hilarious. I thought, so what ends up happening is, like, Eugene Bradford teleports into time and becomes part of the Q continuum.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty.
See,
cool.
I have to one up on you because I actually
wow.
met.
It's amazing.
I
how
met
much,
a,
you know,
John Stewart.
Has in
I
common.
Mean, that's Patrick Stewart. Mm-hmm.
Oh, what about him?
Oh no, I was just saying that. Oh, I'm sorry, Andre. Go ahead.
I say it's amazing how, you know, with the geek culture, how everyone has so much in common with, you know, the Star
yeah.
the Trekkies and Star Wars, the Twilight Zone comics, you know, sci-fi, other sci-fi, you know, the horror, you know, I love horror myself, you know, that's
mm-hmm.
my thing, especially like 8 Films to Die For. Have you ever got into that, John?
Oh, yeah, man, I love those. I wait for those, man. Yeah, I love those. The other one I like a lot is what's the one? Is it After Dark? They're from
After Dark. That's it. A film to die for. After Dark Film Festival.
Is it After Dark too? Okay, so I know there's another one too that's really cool as well. That's kind of similar. But yeah, A Film to Die For is super dope. I like those a lot. Mm-hmm. I always wait for because they drop like 8 new horror movies at the same time.
Right. They were doing it back in the last time they did it was maybe 2-3 years ago. I think I bought like all 24 or however many movies, however many years they did it, I bought every single movie they did. Stuff.
Were you a fan, Andre?
Yes, I was a true fan. But anytime I'm caught up into something like that, and I'm really geeked up about it, I have to just go out and just buy it. I have to have it. It's part of my collection.
Yeah, that's kind of like how I am too, man. I'm a massive Doctor Who fan. So.
Oh my god.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my thing. I mean, people love the Trek. I'm like more than anything. Like I like Star Wars. I like whatever. Mm-hmm. But Doctor Who is my dude. Like,
okay. Who is your favorite Doctor?
Why are you even asking me that, Tom Baker?
My god. You are a man.
Seriously, man. Come on. Come on.
Yes.
Because if you look at it, if you look at like all the doctors that have been like these new shows, every one of them have a little bit of him in them. You know what I'm saying? You cannot play Doctor Who and not look at him and be like, yeah, this dude looks channeling something. You know what I'm saying? Because he also was the most influential because he was doctoring for 7 years.
Yeah.
So he's still the longest running doctor. No one else has played the character that long. So.
Nope. Not even. Yeah. And I thought that David Tennant probably would have, almost, get as long as he was. But there's like, nope, time for a new guy. But, Tom Baker.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom Baker was my guy.
Mm-hmm. I love all of them for one reason or another, but that's my dude. I mean, I've actually like become fans of all of the different doctors' incarnations for different reasons. But yeah, I always go back to him. Yeah, so
I think he really epitomized like what the doctor is all about. I mean, like even though I would watch like some of the older ones, thank goodness for Daily Motion because they have a lot of the old classic episodes of Doctor Who that's on their website. So I got to get more familiar with like William Hartwell and Patrick. Thank you. And then also John Pettley. And even though I liked John, I liked him a lot. I felt that he was very distinguished, and very clever, However,
I didn't use Venusian karate. Anyway.
You can't kill that, he's the only one who really had, the really cool car, Bessie.
Yeah. The Whomobile, man.
Yeah.
Wow. The Whomobile or Bessie, because the Whomobile and Bessie was the car. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what. What's really interesting is his son, Sean Pertwee, is a really dope character actor. He looks just like his father. You've seen him in a million movies. His name's Sean Pertwee, and so. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see this movie called Dog Soldiers, Andre? It's called Dog Soldiers. It's a really campy werewolf movie, and it's by the guy that did the Descent, Neil Marshall. It's his first movie, so it's kind of like
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, you got to check it out. No. When you do get a chance, look him up. He looks just like his father. It's crazy. Like if he just had like the curly white hair, he just looked like.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of him, especially after when John passed like a couple years ago, and I believe that Sean released a statement about thank you to all the fans and everybody that reached out to us about the passing of my father. I remember seeing like pictures of him because I believe that they posted his photo like on BBC BBC.com, and I was like, oh my goodness, he's like the spitting image. Like, he would have never.
He looked like a clone.
definitely. Like, and it's kind of funny. Like, if he would have went on more, they wouldn't even have to do a DNA test on him. Like, John, you are the father.
Yeah, you are the father.
You are the father.
You said that's called the Dog Soldiers?
Dog Soldiers,
that's the name.
Yeah, it's a fun movie, man. You probably, if you like the campy horror movie, it's low budget, you know.
Okay.
So it don't have a lot. It's not a lot of
money. Up there with Bruce Campbell, huh? It's like a Bruce Campbell movie.
Yeah, it's like that kind of movie. Yeah, it's a little bit you know, it's kind of like Evil Dead, because at one particular point where they're trapped in a cottage, it's over the top and crazy. Yeah, Neil Marshall.
Evil Dead, that was like one of my favorites, you know. The Evil Dead was one of my favorites, especially
the
remake.
I like all the Evil Dead, and I love the remake, too. I like all the Evil Dead. Yep.
Right. Now, do you watch
Ash of Evil.
I watched that.
Yeah, I still have yet to watch that.
That's pretty.
Oh, I haven't watched
that's
it
fun.
Yet.
It's a fun movie. It's a fun show. I've been watching it. I think it's off for now, but... I can't wait to come back on. I think they did an excellent job with it myself.
Oh, cool.
I'm still more of a fan of Army of Darkness. Yeah, don't say anything, because like that was my next binge watching show that I needed to do was Ash of Evil.
Yeah, you need to. You need to.
That's the only time I can do horror is if horror is funny at the same time. If it's just completely horror, you know, I get all freaked out.
Yeah,
but it got to be funny,
and
too, then I can get with it.
And this is exactly that funny end. It's got the horror in it as well.
Nice.
You really can't beat it. It is kind of gory.
I'm going to have to check it out. I'm curious about it. I mean, I'm a big fan of the character, so, you know, I will check it out. Mm-hmm. But, Dre, you about to say something, man? We were talking. You about to...
We have so many questions to
ask. Oh, why don't you, man?
Only 9 minutes left.
Well, you know, we only got, like, 8 minutes and something left, so we're going to have
really?
To do, John. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have you on the show again. But what I want you to do in the meantime, before we get into setting up a date and time, I want you to let everyone know how to contact you and let them know more about the upcoming show, the Black Comics Arts Festival and the Black Comics Book Festival coming up.
Okay. The best way to get
One more thing. I'm sorry. You know, because we still have a little bit more time. After you talk about that, can you also kind of touch on, like, some of the other projects that you have coming up as far as, like, your comics and your books that are coming out as well?
Okay, cool. Really quickly, the best way to get at me is probably through Twitter. And my Twitter handle is J.I. Jennings. And so, yeah, that would be a good way to get at me. I'm on there. More than I thought I would be. So anyway, as far as projects, as you heard in the bio, the me and my friend Damien, who I work with quite a bit, we're working on an adaptation of Octavia Butler's Kindred. That's our current project. And it's due out next year. We're working on feverishly right now to finish up the production of it. But it's right at Connor. No one knows who Octavia Butler was. She's like the godmother of black science fiction and fantasy work. And let's see. So also, I'm working on a graphic novel called Kid Code with Damien and Stacey Robinson. And we'll definitely go there and press. And so the next one is coming out soon. I have a graphic novel called Blue Hand Mojo that I'm working on that is kind of like Constantine meets Easy Rollins instead of the 1930s. And the first part of this story called Dust to Dust is already out that you can get. And let's see. I have an art show coming up at Northeastern University. It goes up super soon, and it'll be up till March. That's at Northeastern University in Boston. And, next week I got to go do a talk there, and I'm going to jump on a plane, fly to New York, and it's like San Francisco. It's going to be crazy. So, yeah, those are just a few of the things I've been – doing. There's plenty of other stuff, but you know, I either can't remember right now. We don't have have that much time. But those are some of the things. My publisher for some of those is Rosarium Publishing, and that's a black-owned fantasy and science fiction publisher, actually, that features people of color and people from various backgrounds. So, and it's published by Bill Campbell. So there you have it.
So are you going to do anything with The Hole again?
Well, here's the thing, man. I was just thinking about The Hole today. It's weird because it's an odd book, right? And, you know, we were working on the book, and it's kind of, you know, we left it kind of on a semi, you know, cliffhanger, you know. But it's been, The Hole has been taught in classes and stuff across the country, you know. And we just did a talk at Vassar at The Hole, about The Hole. Mm-hmm. Seriously, they were teaching it in a couple classes there. And so Damien and I started talking about The Hole again. But, you know, I think right now, just because of how stuff is going, it's like, you know, if somebody would drop us a book contract, I think that we would get it done, you know, a lot quicker. I think that right now we're trying to, you know, both of us have families, and, you know, we're kind of going where there's a more lucrative space. Because, you know, it's a very
obscure
book. Yeah, it does. Yeah. I mean, if you don't make dollars, it don't make sense, right? But
we do want to
finish it. You know, I hate to be like that, you know, because even with the, you know, but it's...
It is what it is.
You know, but I definitely want to. We've thought often about finishing the book, but also we've thought about revamping it to be more accessible to popular culture too. Because you've read the book, so you know it's like it's a very heady, crazy, independent book. And it's not mainstream.
Right.
It's not for kids.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
A lot of sex and violence and all kinds of stuff. And it's very it's geared to adults.
I was left hanging when I got it back in 2005 or 3, whenever, you know, they had the East Coast Black Age of Comics at Temple University in the hallway.
Yep.
That's when I got it.
Hello?
Oh, I think
that
we lost
him
again.
I'm still here.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, there
okay.
You go.
What's going on with these phones?
We're sorry about leaving you hanging, man.
It's all good.
Well, it was supposed to be one book, but it was like we had more story than we could do in one story, you know what I'm saying? So we already know how it's going to end. That's what's so frustrating. We know how it's going to end, you know, but it's just finding the time to do it. Like what happened was, we ended up doing Black Comics, and that actually led into other things. And then I moved, and you know, Damien's getting his PhD right now, and you know, it's just stuff. And then you know, baby number two came, and then I moved, and you know, got married, and you know, it's all kinds of stuff. So it's like, yeah, life gets in the way.
Looks like we got a caller online. Looks like we have a caller online. What are you doing? Yeah, I'm going to answer this and see if he has a question here or she. Hold on. Carla, are you there? Hello, 732-618. 732-618-5258. Oh, that phone call dropped.
Hmm.
Wow. Well, there's a lot of that going on here.
I know,
yeah,
right?
Looks like it.
We're
just gonna have to have you on again so that we can talk, and you know, more people will be able to, you know, engage with you and ask you more questions about all of your work.
I'll definitely be down to it. It was a pleasure. You know, congratulations on the show, and you know, I'm hoping that it gets a lot of a lot of play. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing you, Dre, and.
Oh, yeah.
You're
going to
have like a lot of fun, man. I'm telling you. You're
going to
be like, what?
And once again, I want to thank you for coming on the show again. And we get ready to call it a night, John, and I will see you next week, brother.
All right, man. Safe travels. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, John.
All right, you too. Good night.
Good night.